The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
On November 18th, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln arrived by train from Washington to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He went there to participate in a ceremony dedicating the battlefield of Gettysburg as a new Soldiers' National Cemetery. In his brief but eloquent Gettysburg address, Lincoln tried to give meaning to the sacrifice of the over 7,000 Americans who died on that battlefield. He used the occasion to urge those loyal to the Union to take, quote, from these honored dead increased devotion to that cause for which they gave their last full measure of devotion. That phrase has always resonated with me, the last full measure of devotion. The fallen at Gettysburg had given their last full measure of devotion. They'd given their lives. They had nothing more to give. And I thought a great deal over the years about how we, the living, could honor the millions of Americans who died fighting our wars. I hope that our service this Memorial Day will help answer the question, to what cause today could we, the living, increase devotion if we truly aspire to honor the honored dead? I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And on behalf of the committee and the fellowship as a whole, I welcome you, whoever you are, wherever you are on your life journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, you are welcome here and invited to join us in worship as we seek to find meaning and universal truth in observing Memorial Day 2024. And we begin worship today with the lighting of our chalice. The chalice and the flame together are the symbol of our free faith. And this morning, let that flame symbolize remembrance. So busy rehearsing beforehand, got to light that thing. Okay. Across many cultures and ages, lighting candles in remembrance of loved ones is a time-honored tradition, often expressed in candlelight vigils and candlelight services, and at the gravesite of the unknown soldier, and at the final resting place of eminent people like President John Fitzgerald Kennedy and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we maintain a perpetual flame. This Memorial Day weekend, in remembrance, we light our chalice with a responsive reading, so you guys are in on this, right, of a text by Reverend Nicole McKay, Unitarian Universalist minister and the first UU chaplain in the Canadian Armed Forces, David. We gather to remember those who could not grow old and those forced to grow old before their time. We gather to do the arduous work of facing the difficult realities of our present and our past, where there is conflict, violence, war, and hatred. We gather to rekindle our source of hope for our future by recognizing in one another our shared humanity, and we join in a concerted commitment for a better tomorrow. We gather because we need community to do all of this holy work. We light our peace lamp this morning with the same prayer we recite every time we gather to worship. But let's speak these words mindfully this morning, fully aware of the meaning and magnitude of the hope they express. This Memorial Day weekend, let these words serve as a call to dedicate ourselves to a cause worthy of the last full measure of devotion, a just and lasting peace on earth. May peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Oops. Now let's reinforce that message by singing hymn number 126, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. It asks for help to create a loving and just world where the cries of war fall silent. Christine Perry, Nicole Russer, and I will lead us in singing hymn number 26, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing.
Come thou fount of every blessing, tune our hearts to sing thy grace. Streams of mercy never ceasing, call for songs of loudest praise. While the hope of God's perfection fills our hearts with joy and love, teach us ever to be faithful, may we still thy goodness prove. Come thou fount of every vision, lift your eyes to what may come. See the lion and the young lamb dwell together in thy home. Hear the cries of mortal silent, hear our hope grow like the sun. When we all serve one another, then our heaven is begun. Come thou font of inspiration, turn our lives to higher ways. Lift our gloom and desperation, show the promise of the day. Help us find ourselves in union, help our hands down of our love. With thy aid, O font of justice, earth be fair as heaven above.
There it is.
Two versions of this song. Do we have any children among us? Well, you know what? I'm still going to do the moment for all ages here, so. Because it is for all ages, right? And, guys, right. Well, does anybody here have to go to work tomorrow? Nope, right, because it's a day off, right? It's a national holiday, it's Memorial Day, right? Okay. We observe it every year on the last Monday of May. And do we all know how it originated and how it became a national holiday?
Decoration Day, I think.
Well, here we go. Almost 150 years ago, John Alexander Logan proposed that the last Monday in May be a national holiday to honor soldiers killed in the American Civil War. And there were a lot of them to honor, because there were over 600,000 who died in the Civil War, and more than a million were injured. It was originally called Decoration Day, and that derives from the fact that in the military, when you honor a soldier, you often say you're decorating the soldier. And so that carried on to decorating the graves of the fallen soldiers, bringing flowers and flags to the gravesite to honor them, to dedicate them. But I want to focus today on the man who pushed to create a nationally observed Decoration Day, what we now call Memorial Day, because his life shows us how a person can change themselves into a force for good. It's a guy named John Alexander Logan. He was nicknamed Blackjack Logan, and he proposed a National Decoration Day in 1868. Now, he was born into a powerful family in southern Illinois, and his whole family was very much involved in state government. In fact, he himself was involved in state government. His father was a slaveholder, and he had earned the nickname Dirty Work Logan because of his strong support for slavery and because he pushed through laws that made it almost impossible for a person of color, even a freed black slave, to live in that state. The laws were so burdensome that it was almost difficult for a person to even live, let alone thrive in that state. They were called Logan's Black Laws. All right. But something happened. When seven southern states decided to break off from the United States, Jack Logan made a big decision. He couldn't support breaking up the United States. He did a complete 180, went from here to there, right? He became a supporter of Abraham Lincoln and the Union. He formed a unit of soldiers, led them in battle on the side of the Union. And as a general, his nickname was Black Jack Logan because he had a very dark complexion and dark black hair, right? Well, when the war was over, the Union had won, Jack Logan went back into government, not just in his home state, but in Washington, D.C., and he helped make laws for the entire country. And he became one of the strongest voices in Congress speaking up for freed slaves. He became a champion of racial equality and voting rights. In fact, he declared in a speech in 1867, quote, "I don't care whether a man is black, red, blue, or white, if he is a civilized man in a Christian community like ours, he has the right to say who shall control the government." So, Black Jack Logan considered his greatest accomplishment the establishment of Memorial Day. But I think his greatest achievement was transforming himself from a person who denied freedom to others into a champion of freedom for others. And in spite of what he had been taught as a child, in spite of what his family and friends thought, his mother disowned him after he joined the Union, by the way, said she'd never speak to him again. In spite of that, he did the right thing. And he knew it wasn't enough to put flowers and flags on the grave of fallen soldiers to honor them. He knew he had to work for a just and lasting peace by devoting himself to the cause they died for. And that's what this community hopes its members, including its youngest members, will always do, right? Get on the right side of history, do the right thing, dedicate ourselves to seek more justice and peace, not only for ourselves, but as we declare when we light our peace lamp, for all the people of the world. End of that. We have no children to sing off, so we'll skip that. Right. Okay. Andrew W. Carroll edits books that chronicle history by assembling letters written by people who lived that history. Two of his books, War Letters and Behind the Lines, capture the experience of war in letters written by soldiers. In the introduction to Behind the Lines, Carroll writes, "Statistics can accentuate the enormity of war, but not its humanity. And these letters are stark reminders of the individual stories behind the numbers." And today, Mike Berkheimer, Nicole Reusner, and I would like to share with you some letters especially relevant to the observance of Memorial Day and to our service this morning. These are last letters home. That is, the final written words of soldiers who died serving their country. American soldiers, since the early days of the Revolutionary War, have written letters that shared their fears, their hopes, and their love and concerns with those who waited anxiously behind. On June 12, 1779, James Williams begins a letter to his son Daniel, writing, "This is the first chance I have had to write you. I am by the cause of Providence in the field of defense of my country." Williams goes on to express how deeply he misses his 8 children and their mother, who sits like a dove that lost its mate, having the weight of the family on her shoulders. He describes the accidental death of a fellow soldier and then concludes, "Uncertainty of life ought to induce in every man to prepare for death." James Williams died at the Battle of Kings Mountain in South Carolina. His letter is among the earliest of those preserved in which American soldiers confront the possibility that they are communicating with their loved ones for the last time. From Bunker Hill to the mountains of Afghanistan, Last Letters Home continue to document the tragic legacy of war. The letters provide a tangible connection to the past, but they also humanize those in uniform. We see them not just as soldiers, but as a parent, a spouse, a child, a sibling, a fiance, a best friend. Mike Berkheimer will share some of those letters with us now.
Among those heartbreaking letters are those written by mortally wounded soldiers who realize their life is ebbing away. John Ross Waller volunteered to serve as a drummer boy in the Civil War when he was just 15 years old. Shot in the leg, he languished for days in a military hospital. From his bed, he dictated a short letter to his family before he died. Dear sister, father, mother, and friends, I received your letter, but I don't think I shall ever see another that you write. This is Friday night, but I don't think I will live to see the morning. But my kind friends, I am a soldier of Christ. I will meet you all in heaven. My leg has been taken above my knee. I am dying at this time. So don't mourn after me, for I have bled and died for my country. May God help you all to pray for me. I want you all to meet in heaven above. Dear sister, you wanted to know if my leg would be stiff. God bless your soul, sister. I will be stiff all over before 24 hours. My wound dresser is writing this letter for me. When you get this letter, write to Alexander Nealon, for I won't live till morning. So goodbye, my friends. May God be with you all. Goodbye. God bless my poor soul. On September 11th, 1918, Sergeant David Kerr wrote a letter to his mother, his sister Elizabeth, and his fiancée Mary the day before the attack on San Mihiel, about 200 miles east of Paris, France. San Mihiel was the first battle of World War I led by the American Expeditionary Force. Tomorrow the first totally American drive commences, and it gives me inexpressible joy and pride to know that I shall be present to do my share, Sergeant Kerr writes. Should I go under, therefore, I want you to know that I went without any terror of death, and that my chief worry is the grief my death will bring those so dear to me. Since having found myself in Mary, there has been much to make life sweet and glorious, but death, while distasteful, is in no way terrible. I feel wonderfully strong to do my share well, and for my sake, you must try to drown your sorrow in the pride and satisfaction, the knowledge that I died in so clean a cause as is ours, I should bring you. Remember how proud I have always been of your superb pluck. Keep Elizabeth's future in mind, and don't permit my death to bow your head. My personal belongings will all be sent to you. Your good taste will tell you which to send to Mary. May God bless and keep you, dear heart, and be kind to little Elizabeth and those others I love so well. David. The Americans broke through the German lines, but suffered 7,000 casualties in the three-day offensive. 20-year-old David Kerr was among the dead. Now, Nicole Russert.
As Mike noted earlier, among the most heartbreaking letters are those written by soldiers who know they're dying. 21-year-old Lieutenant Tommy Kennedy, serving in World War II, knew he would not come back alive. He'd been captured by the Japanese at Corregidor and spent nearly 3 years as a prisoner of war. Fatally malnourished and incarcerated on a hell ship, he scribbled a farewell message to his parents on the backs of two family photographs. Mommy and Dad, it is pretty hard to check out this way without a fighting chance, but we can't live forever. I'm not afraid to die. I just hate the thought of not seeing you again. Buy Turkey Ranch with my money and just think of me often while you're there. Make liberal donations to both sisters. See that Gary has a new car for his first year of high school. I'm sending Walt's medals to his mother. He gave them to me that last time I saw him in Bud. They went to Japan. I guess you can tell Patty that fate just didn't want us to be together. Hold a nice service for me in Bakersfield and put a headstone in the new cemetery. Take care of my nieces and nephews. Don't let them ever want anything as much as I want even warmth and water now. Loving and waiting for you in the world beyond, your son, Lieutenant Tommy Kennedy. Lieutenant Kennedy's letter was smuggled out of a POW camp in the heel of a fellow POW's boot. The letter was finally mailed to his parents in 1945, more than 4 years after he'd left to fight in the Pacific. 21-year-old Sergeant John Harapko, serving with the 10th Mountain Division of the Coalition Forces in Afghanistan, wrote this letter to his mother before the start of Operation Anaconda, a major assault on Taliban and Al-Qaeda strongholds that would become one of the worst firefights of the Afghan campaign. Dear Mom, I'm writing this letter before I leave. I couldn't say what I wanted to over the phone. First, I want to say I love you so much. You were always there for me, even though I would never talk about my problems. Second, you gave me the options to be a man, giving me slack to try and make the right decisions. No matter what, you always believed in me, no matter how much of a punk I was to you. We're leaving for Bagram to flush out over 600 soldiers from the mountains. This is the biggest battle of the war on terrorism. We already sustained 30 casualties and one KIA killed in action. I don't want you to worry about me. I know you will, because I'm your son. Mom, I'm not afraid to die for something that is right. I just hope I make you proud. And if I don't come home for any reason, I just want you to know I'll always be with you. Well, Mom, I have to go now. All that I have said are words from my heart, and I mean every last one of them. Tell Aunt Joyce I said hi and love her. I hope to see you soon, but if that doesn't work out, I just needed you to know how I felt. Love you and miss you. Take care. You're always in my thoughts. Your loving son, Josh. Ironically, Josh Harapko survived combat in Afghanistan, but died in 2003 when the Black Hawk helicopter he was flying crashed during a training mission at Fort Drum, New York. Shortly before he died, he decided to give his mother the letter he'd written in the uncertain hours before Operation Anaconda. She cherishes it as Josh's last letter home.
We should have left tissues on every seat today, don't you think? This song dates back to the first Iraq War, and it's based on a true story. As a lot of you know, I make part of my living drawing pictures of people, funny pictures of people. I always ask people what they want to be doing in their picture. And I pretty much drawn almost every theme you could think of, but this one caught me by surprise. My wife's looking at me like I need to tune my guitar. After 30 years, you know what each look means. Frankly, we could use a little comic relief, but now, what do you think? She's taking a picture of me tuning. I was drawing pictures on the street a week ago. Even at my prices, traffic was a little slow. Just when I was thinking, that's it, last one, no more. Couple kids tugged at my sleeve. They seemed about 6 and 4. The older one, a boy, said, "Mister, you sketch good. Could you draw me and my sister?" I said, "Son, why, sure I could." Said, "I can draw you playing your favorite sport or game, your hobby or your fantasy, anything you name." He said, "Just draw us looking as happy as you can, and in the middle leave a space for a grown-up man. Our dream is for our daddy to be back with us again. My sister really misses him. I do too, now and then. He is far, far away in some country called Iraq, and we don't know when our daddy's coming back. Mama said that he went looking for some stuff that wasn't there. She says the world's a nasty place and life ain't always fair. She says that he is fighting a war that can't be won, and he should be back home with her and his daughter and his son. He is far, far away in some country called Iraq, and we don't know when our daddy's coming back. My daddy wrote my mama, telling her how much he missed her, said to give a hug and kiss to me and my sister. My mama wrote my daddy, telling him how much we'd grown, said, honey, you won't recognize him when you finally get home. He is far, far away in some country called Iraq, and we don't know when our daddy's coming back. So, mister, if you draw us looking just how we look now, we'll send that picture to my dad over there somewhere, somehow, so he can keep it in the glove box of his big armored car, like a map of his family to remember who we are. He is far, far away in some country called Iraq, and we don't know when our daddy's coming back. I finished up that family portrait with a tear stain on the side. Across the top I wrote, Daddy's joy and pride. The boy asked, what's this picture worth? Said 1,000 words or so. Then his sister, who had not said boo, started singing sweet and low. My daddy lies over the ocean. My daddy lies over the sea. My daddy lies over the ocean. Bring back my daddy to me. Bring back, oh, bring back my daddy to me, sing with me. Bring back, oh, bring back my daddy to me.
Now come to that time in our service for matters of the heart, when those among us who have a sorrow weighing their spirit down or a joy lifting their spirit up, to bring that joy or sorrow to the light of this faith community. After we have a musical interlude, Mike McNeil will instruct us all how to participate in matters of the heart. Thank you.
If we are here in the sanctuary today, the microphone that is center stage, the wireless mic, is our home. We can head up front if we have something that is lifting us up that we need to share, or something that is dragging us down that we need to share. If folks on Zoom would like to participate, you can either use Zoom's raise hand feature, which should be found under reactions, whether you've joined today on a computer or a mobile device. And if you're not feeling up to speaking, but you'd like to share something in chat, I would be happy to read that out for you at the end of Matters of the Heart.
I'd like to bring our sharing to a close this morning with a special song. The Agnus Dei is a prayer recited in Christian worship. Agnus Dei qui tollis peccata mundi, dona nobis pacem. Translation, Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, grant us peace. The phrase dona nobis pacem is recited and paraphrased in many prayers and songs. Christine, Nicole, and I will close Matters of the Heart this morning with a sung version of Dona Nobis Pacem, grant us peace, hymn number 388 in our gray hymnal. If at any time you would like to join in, please do, if only to repeat the phrase, Dona Nobis Pacem. Last month, our TPUF book discussion, there's one following the service today, right? But last month, our TPUF book discussion selection was Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle. It's a dark novel, satirizing the assumed redemptive value of religion and of science as well. In chapter 114 of the novel, now the chapters are very small, they're very short, right? In chapter 114 of the novel, the principal characters in the story gather for a commemorative ceremony honoring San Lorenzo's 100 Martyrs to Democracy, a ceremony echoing our Memorial Day. San Lorenzo is a fictional banana republic governed by a deranged dictator.
The 100 martyrs were denizens of San Lorenzo who volunteered to join the U.S. forces in World War II. Unfortunately, they never made it out of the harbor of San Lorenzo because the boat they shipped out on was sunk almost immediately after launch by a German submarine. The recently assigned ambassador to San Lorenzo is tapped to speak on the occasion. The ambassador has prepared a speech, but at the last minute, he decides not to deliver it. Instead, he announces, quote, "I am about to do a very unambassadorial thing. I am about to tell you what I really feel." And he begins by explaining that he'll refer to the 100 martyrs as children. Although, quote, "it is customary on days like this to call such lost children men," the ambassador is unable to call them men, he confesses, because in that same war, his own son died. And included in his impromptu address are these words, "And I propose to you that if we are to pay our sincere respects to the 100 lost children of San Lorenzo, that we might best spend the day despising what killed them, which is to say, the stupidity and viciousness of all mankind." He goes on, "Perhaps when we remember wars, we should take off our clothes and paint ourselves blue and go on all fours all day long and grunt like pigs. That would surely be more appropriate than noble oratory and shows of flags and well-oiled guns." He doesn't mean to be ungrateful for the fine martial show we are about to see, and a thrilling show it will be. But he raises the question, if today is really in honor of 100 children murdered in war, is today a day for a thrilling show? Obviously for him, to one who lost a child in battle, the question is not merely a rhetorical one. "Yes," he answers, "on one condition, that the celebrants are working consciously and tirelessly to reduce the stupidity and viciousness of themselves and all mankind." The ambassador tosses a wreath into the harbor where San Lorenzo's 100 martyrs to democracy died. The wreath is, quote, "a gift from one country to the people of another." And then he adds, "never mind which countries, think of people. Think of children murdered in war, and any country at all. Think of peace. Think of brotherly love. Think of plenty. Think of what a paradise this world would be if men were kind and wise." Kurt Vonnegut, through his unambassadorial ambassador, challenges us to think how we could most suitably and sincerely honor all the children killed in war. And they were, no matter how old or of what historical period, they were someone's children, weren't they? Is it with parades, concerts, 21-gun salutes, fireworks, fighter jet flyovers? Or is it by remembering the loss of precious human life and love? Is it by pledging ourselves to work consciously and tirelessly to eliminate the causes of war? Yes, the socioeconomic and political reasons, but also the ones that stubbornly reside in the human psyche: viciousness, stupidity, greed, jealousy, and hatred. Is it to actively work, not just pray for peace on earth? Is it to practice loving kindness toward all humankind? Howard Zinn was an American historian, playwright, philosopher, intellectual, and a World War II veteran. And he wrote this. You gotta see, he's a real iconoclast. "Memorial Day will be celebrated by the usual betrayal of the dead, by the hypocritical patriotism of the politicians and contractors preparing for more wars, more graves to receive more flowers on future memorial days. The memory of the dead deserves a different dedication: to peace, to defiance of government." I think, as you heard from those letters, the dead speak to us, and I think that's what their message is to us.
Our closing song this morning is Where Have All the Flowers Gone? I think you know this song pretty well, or you'll pick it up almost immediately. So please join in singing Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Before we extinguish our chalice and our peace lamp, let's recite one more reminder of an appropriate reason to observe Memorial Day and what it calls upon us to do to honor the honored dead. We ready? We come this day called by war, by the suffering we inflict and endure, when minds across borders fail to reason and compromise. We come this day called by hope, hope that we will, in some season, finally surrender our swords for plowshares.
And we come this day called by peace. May we hear its song, may we proclaim its promise.
May our remembrance today renew our struggle. We can never stay or rest. Shanti, Shalom, Namaste, peace.